You are listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News coming to you from the Sea Ranch, California on this, the 23rd day of April, 2015, where it's a 72 degrees and rather balmy, just a lovely evening. And I just read a paper that I wanted to share with you folks on this, the inaugural podcast of Pituitary World News. And the paper is titled Excess Mortality Associated with Hypopituitarism in Adults, a Meta-Analysis of Observational Studies. It's by Papa Chan and others out of the United Kingdom. Now, we've known for decades that patients with hypopituitarism have an increased mortality, and most of that mortality is related to cardiovascular disorders. These investigators have looked at a total of 19,153 hypopituitary adults over six important studies and analyzed hypopituitarism, the risk, and some of the causes of the excess mortality in hypopituitary patients. They saw that the standardized mortality ratio for hypopituitarism was 1.99. Now, what that means is if your mortality was equal to the normal population, it would be 1.0. So 1.99 is a twofold increase in mortality relative to the normal population for hypopituitary patients. Interestingly, the ratio was 1.71 in men and 2.53 in women, suggesting that women are more likely to have mortality as a consequence of hypopituitarism. Generally, we think of women having a survival advantage over men and certainly living longer than men, but it seems that hypopituitarism equalizes that mortality so that women typically then would have a shorter life expectancy than men. One of the things I want to say at the outset is that these mortality data come from an analysis of studies where hypopituitarism might not have been appropriately treated across all patient groups, and certainly for all patients. So you have to keep in mind that we believe that therapy may actually improve the outcome of hypopituitarism. Interestingly, in this study, non-functioning pituitary adenoma was the most common cause of hypopituitarism, but that wasn't universal amongst all of the different papers they had reviewed. Patients who'd had a transcranial operation rather than a transphenoidal operation had a higher mortality, as did those who had cranial radiation, and usually we're referring to the old form of conventional radiotherapy rather than gamma knife radiosurgery. However, we need more data to look at what happens with gamma knife radiosurgery, because we know that anywhere from 20 to 40% of patients will develop hypopituitarism after gamma knife radiosurgery in the region of the pituitary fossa. Now, one of the most interesting things that came out of this analysis was that growth hormone replacement in hypopituitary adults showed an improvement in the mortality risk that was comparable to the background population. So the standardized mortality ratio, for example, in those patients receiving growth hormone replacement was 1.15. It almost encompassed the 1.0 for the normal, whereas the standardized mortality ratio in those patients who did not receive growth hormone replacement was 2.4. So that's a rather interesting observation. Now, a couple of studies have suggested that growth hormone replacement does improve overall survival. Interestingly, in this study, growth hormone replacement did not reduce the standardized mortality ratio in women as much as it did in men, although there was a reduction in the mortality rate in women who were treated with growth hormone. And I wanted to use this as a segue to talk about some of the cardiovascular risks and other benefits of growth hormone replacement that are perhaps related to survival in patients with hypopituitarism. And furthermore, I want to try to simplify this so that you can be conversational about this topic with your treating physicians and participate in any decision making about testing for growth hormone deficiency and or treatment for growth hormone deficiency that you may know exists now or certainly after any particular testing has been performed. But before we do that, first let's talk about cardiovascular disease. What we're referring to here is disease of the heart and the blood vessels. And the blood vessels are arteries and veins. Generally speaking, when it comes to hypopituitarism and most disorders, we're talking about diseases of the arteries. We refer to coronary artery disease as vascular disease that affects the blood vessels that feed the heart. Cerebrovascular disease is disease of the carotid arteries and the blood vessels that feed the brain, whereas peripheral vascular disease is a disease of the blood vessels that feed the rest of the body, which most commonly occurs in the lower abdomen and pelvis and legs, less commonly in the upper extremities. Over time, we have thought of the main risk factors for cerebro and cardiovascular and peripheral vascular disease to be smoking, tobacco products, diabetes mellitus, hypertension, family history, and hypercholesterolemia. I think that now we would have to add hypopituitarism and growth hormone deficiency to that list. So what's going on, and how is your pituitary gland connected to your blood vessels? Well, most of you who have pituitary disease know that the pituitary gland is connected to everything else, and it's no mystery to you as patients, but it's a mystery to a lot of physicians. So basically, one of the first things we learned about hypopituitarism is that patients who are hypopituitary and growth hormone deficient have a high cholesterol level. And the good cholesterol is low, the bad cholesterol is high. And we all know about the risk of hypercholesterolemia and coronary disease. So patients with hypopituitarism have a likelihood of disease of the blood vessels as a consequence of the hypercholesterolemia. There is a clear association with metabolic syndrome and intra-abdominal obesity and coronary artery disease in patients who do not have hypopituitarism. And what we know about hypopituitarism and growth hormone deficiency is patients have increased intra-abdominal fat and are overweight and have a profile that is similar to metabolic syndrome. Furthermore, if one has the genetics of metabolic syndrome, that can be worsened by being growth hormone deficient. There are a number of markers of inflammation that are important in coronary disease, and we know that patients with growth hormone deficiency have elevated PAI-1 levels and C-reactive protein levels and other markers, for example, that are leading to more atherogenic blood. Furthermore, we know that patients who have hypopituitarism have an increased thickness of the carotid artery intima media, and that's basically the middle layer of blood vessels, and that in itself is associated with the risk of stroke. Then to add insult to injury, we believe that cranial irradiation can cause inflammation in blood vessels, and that potentially makes it more likely to form a plaque and ultimately a platelet plug or a thrombus in a blood vessel that can lead to a stroke that might be associated with this cardiovascular mortality in patients with hypopituitarism. So that's a brief overview of how growth hormone can play a role in increasing cardiovascular risk, but it's important to understand that treatment of hypopituitarism or lack of treatment may also contribute in some ways. For example, if you are overtreated with steroids or have a history of Cushing's, you can have hypertension, diabetes mellitus, and obesity that can contribute to your atherosclerotic risk. Patients who are hypothyroid and have insufficient treatment of their thyroid hormone deficiency will also have hypercholesterolemia, which might contribute to that risk. And women who are sex steroid deficient and do not take replacement hormones have higher cholesterol levels as well. So after hearing all of this, you might think that the writing is on the wall. And hopefully that's not what's going through your mind at this time. And there is hope. And the hope is to ensure that you work with your physicians, that all of your hormone replacements are perfect. I hate to use that word, but I really truly mean to use that word. And that all of your doses are optimized so that you're on precisely the right dose of thyroid hormone and you're on sex steroids and not on too much if you're a man and on an appropriate amount if you're a woman, and that your dose of steroids is not excessive. Too much is not good, too little is not good either. So everything has to be perfect. And that if you have growth hormone deficiency, you seriously think about taking growth hormone to decrease your cardiovascular risk. What we do know in response to growth hormone is that cholesterol levels usually improve and go back to where they probably would be if you didn't have hypopituitarism. The PAI-1 and the CRP and the other inflammatory markers usually revert to normal. That thickness of the carotid arteries and other blood vessels that I mentioned in the intima media usually reverses to normal as well. And obviously, patients who take growth hormone have changes in body composition that are important and can lead to a decreased metabolic syndrome and an overall decreased cardiovascular risk. And then it's no surprise that this study, as well as others, have showed that growth hormone replacement shows an improvement in the mortality risk comparable to the normal population. In my opinion, this is yet another convincing reason to consider growth hormone replacement in the treatment of your hypopituitarism. There are, of course, a lot of different benefits of growth hormone replacement, and we'll cover those in a future podcast. I would refer you to our website where there are articles that you might read that cover growth hormone replacement in detail. That is www.pituitaryworldnews.com. And lastly, I would like to ask you, the listener, to tell us what you would like to hear about. How can we help you? What is important to you? Share your stories with us. Let's work together to educate the world about pituitary disorders and be of assistance to those in need. You've been listening to a podcast from Pituitary World News. I'm Dr. Lewis Blevins. Good night.